Welcome to Ballsy, the podcast where I interview successful artists and creators on how they got the balls to sell their art and turn their practice into a profitable business. As a former entrepreneur turned artist, I realized that being an artist is basically like running a small startup, and you, the artist, are the CEO. I talk to artists about their businesses, talk real numbers, growth hacks, tools and tricks, and how they were ballsy enough to make that their career.
Welcome to Ballsy, for those who have the balls to sell some art. Today we're talking to Dot. What do you go by? Department of Transportation? Your real name? How do you want to be addressed?
It's actually not Department of Transportation, it's Department of Transformation.
Oh, so Transformation, that's even better.
That's a logo that actual departments of transportation use, but I grabbed it, stole it, made it my own thing as a little brand play. But I go by Dot, yeah, D-O-T.
Yeah, okay. What's your real name, or do you want to keep it just Dot?
My first name is Daniel.
Okay, Dan. All right. I will call you Dot. So just to give a start, first and foremost, let's just describe your work real quick. You do really cool. I'll let you do it. First, start by saying what your Instagram is so people can see it. If they're watching along, there'll be a link in the bottom as well. But give us a little background of your work aesthetically, and then how you got into art.
Sure. Yeah. My Instagram handle is can't stop dot. And yeah, my style, I've coined this signature hand generated like visual interference style. It plays into like early op art movements and has little elements of abstract expressionism to it. Very linear, very geometric, but meanwhile also has this kind of like organic movement to it. I'm super fascinated with optical illusions. I think there's like something in the thought of what is actually real, what's actually in reality versus what we can perceive. So I like to play on that in my art making.
Yeah, visually, they have a lot for static work. They have a lot of motion, like your eye kind of tricks them, and I think they're really cool.
Exactly. You also asked, oh, go ahead.
No, keep going.
No, I was just circling back. You also asked how I got my start making art. I moved to California to pursue a master's degree and went through those steps. And in that process, was able to explore myself more in California and with the people around. And I've always made art for myself personally. And I was inspired to take that a step further in terms of the production of it. And I just got natural interest from the community and not digital community, not in the locale, but nationally.
And I always like to figure out, like, so you're doing your job, you're doing your music stuff, you are starting to go well. When did you get your first couple sales? And at what point did you have the confidence to be, I might be able to pull this off as a job?
Just to backtrack a little bit, just to clarify, the music thing was in Chicago. I moved to California to pursue a master's degree. So while I was living in LA, okay, after I had left that Chicago music space, I was just studying graduate school. And then while I was in, and then just a little bit more in depth on that, so some more context. While I was still in graduate school, I had transitioned to doing like production jobs, art installs for like Insomniac and other festivals where we would design these like immersive interactive experiences. But that never really felt very fulfilling in terms of the art making process. And it was always more stress than reward, it felt like. And so the pandemic hit, and so because of the pandemic, the production jobs ended and dried up. And so in that 9 month to 1 year period, I was able to look inside and use that studio space that I had to really dive into making my own artwork. Yeah, I'm actually grateful to that moment because it freed up a big chunk in my schedule that I was able to develop into the style that I'm in now. But I'm sorry, what was the original question? I'm on a tangent there.
Well, no, it's good. I love this. So for you, it was COVID forced you into art full time.
It's not that it forced me into art full time. It freed up my schedule. It's not those early, whatever, year or half year of COVID, I wasn't making any money from my art. I was just like, in all essences, just taking my studio time in my own art making process more seriously because I had so much more free time. Essentially from getting my industry that I was working in, had no job, no work at all. And so I just, it was sheer because I had free time.
And so it's now COVID, you're developing your series of work, you're starting getting in there. Where were you selling it? Like, I guess, where were you selling your work?
Yeah.
I assume online, like all of us, but what was the, like, how did your career progress now that you've decided to focus and dive in and chew in on it?
Yeah, it was honestly one thing at a time. I was lucky enough to have some savings from the work that I was doing prior, and I leaned into spending my own money, investing my own money into producing artwork. And so I slowly just would make one thing and then post about it on Instagram and get some interest, and just one commission kind of would happen. And then some time would go by, another commission would happen, and it's built into murals. I did my first mural in Chicago, actually. I flew back to Chicago where I lived for a while and did a mural in a mural project called The Beeline. That mural really actually opened a whole market to me in terms of work, like mural artwork. People saw what I did on that square, on that space there, and they wanted it on their wall. And so from that, I've been able to bounce between commission work and for like paintings and studio pieces, and then larger mural projects.
So you found it was doing that big scale installation that is a catalyst to more work.
Absolutely. And also that mural block that I did the mural on had a lot of eyes on it because of just the significance it was restoring to that area. That was actually that block, or that was called The Beeline, which was a historical, like a mural gallery from like the early 70s, I believe. I'm not sure on the facts on that, but LeVar Horde, who runs that project, was like, took it upon himself to create that space and allow artists like myself to express there. But that wall actually wasn't even, it was the biggest thing I had done to that point, but I think it was only like 15 by 15 feet. So not as big as some of the other murals I've done since then.
All right. So we're going to get to all this and how you do it. So yeah. Like I said, try to break this down. As artists, we're CEOs of our own little companies, right? We're in charge of everything, mm-hmm. Production, marketing, sales, advertising, like we do it all. So I try to like frame this and the questions kind of in the context of selling art. So I start with like revenue and sales. So how much work do you actually make? Are you putting out a lot of work? Do you put out a ton of paintings, not so many? What's your production like?
So I am currently, in terms of commissions on my books are closed situation, I don't like to overproduce pieces. My pieces are very labor intensive and extremely detailed. And I'm actually in production right now on 8 brand new pieces for a upcoming show in Chicago on December 9th.
But congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's not a solo show. It's part of a group show, but still amazing. Yeah. I don't know. I like to produce work all the time, regardless of whether it's being commissioned or not. I feel like it's important to constantly be pushing the envelope of what I'm making and developing my style and obviously taking it to a higher level. But yeah, I like to work within what I know that I'm being allocated for, if that makes sense.
So you're not like ridiculously prolific. You're making a couple pieces a month, that type of thing.
Exactly.
Correct. Okay. And just for this point of reference, like price point wise?
The price points of my pieces are, it's a per inch price. It varies because, yes, per square inch. And so I price everything per square inch. Go ahead.
I do per square foot. I like the per square inch. I hadn't heard of that before.
The square inch is nice because it opens the door, because, you know, some works, some people want an 18 by 24 panel in their house or in their hallway or wherever in their studio. Some people want 80 by 80 inch massive wall piece. And so I like to be able to be more detailed in the pricing on that. The price per square inch varies based on the style. Yep.
Cool. I always am curious of like price per square inch is cool, like how people price their work. And I assume as you become more popular and like it starts to grow, your pricing has increased with that as well.
I remember, like, I forget where I heard this or reading it somewhere. it was like guidance and how to price yourself. So if the rule of thumb was, if you have a price point and you have a ton of stock, that means your price point is too high. But if you have a price point and you're constantly sold out, that means your price point is a little too low. Or maybe just you can go up a little bit, but you're like in that sweet zone. So it's grown over the time, obviously, and I think it will continue to grow as interest grows with me.
By the way, that's like the most, that's like such an obvious tip. It's all, and a friend of mine always said, it's always easier to make your prices. If from a pricing standpoint, if you're negotiating with someone, you can always make price. It's very easy to lower price. Can't raise a price.
Exactly.
And are you, and so do you do things other than just your originals? Do you do prints? Obviously you do installations. I've seen on your site, you have some merch. Like, what other revenue drivers do you have?
Yeah. So I'm doing my first hoodie release right now. Today is actually the last day, or it's probably by the time this airs, will be already too late. My orders are closing today, November 15th. But yeah, I have prints that are available. I did a print run and I did pretty decent on those. It was like a 4 variation color print. So there's 50 of each. And then I saved a few and have done like hand embellishments on them, which people like as well. And then, yes. I'm just getting into like clothing merch. Earlier this summer, I did a collab jumpsuit design with other fellow artist Lefty out there, who's a good friend of mine.
Okay.
And it was about 60 or 70 pieces for one client for this thing, this party that they were doing. So after doing that, I've always wanted to make clothing. And so it was a no-brainer to start these little minimal drops.
Yeah. I'm always curious of because obviously art is art, has its own like slow sales process in many ways. So like the little side hustles people do to augment or to have multiple revenue streams at different price points to keep all people interested. It's just smart.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask did you get sucked into the NFT game at all, or did you stay clear of that?
I think like most artists, I was definitely interested by it. Thankfully, I wasn't as prolific enough. I have, just to go back a little bit, some of my other friends who are also artists did very well, and I'm very proud of them for being involved in it. I think they maintained their integrity while doing it, because the things that they were producing were visually great to look at and also had a very nice like collectability to them. They were in the right moment for that time as it was exploding. I think personally, in my interest, in terms of my career and my art, it was not quite as relevant. Having said all that, I did make a few like one of ones and sold them to some people who are my other collectors for some of my pieces. And I dabble. I'm interested in cryptocurrency. I'm not like a cryptocurrency absolutist like some, but yeah, as we see now, again, the market is not doing well. And a lot of those like really big, like bulky projects that aren't like the top tier blue chip that the apes or the crypto punks are really suffering. And even those, in terms of if you look at it as like a commodity or like however you want to look at it, they probably lost 20 or 30% of their value. I don't know what those exact, so I'm not sure if those numbers are exact, but they've definitely lost value since the big peak and bubble of it.
Yeah.
I'm still interested in AR, NFTs and NFT art, especially the whole NFT like AI art side, not like the AI computer like composition programs that we see, but yeah, it's a whole different tangent I can go into. But
yeah, I'm always curious to see. I caught a little bit of it, more like flipping them than actually making them. So I made a couple, but yeah. I'm always curious of people who caught, like I've interviewed a bunch of some people who that was their bit. That's what they did. So I'm always curious to see. Or not. Also, just I've interviewed a couple big NFT artists that have just made them.
Oh, God, awful. Gotcha.
All right. So we're going to rotate a little bit to sales. And so the next question is, where do most of your sales come from? Is it gallery? Is it social media? Is it third party sites? Social? What are your kind of inbound traffic sources?
A lot of my commissioned pieces for the hoodies, for the prints, it has mainly been via social media and just through my own kind of acting as my own agent, if you will.
Okay.
And I've had others connect some sales for me and for a fee. And then I've also worked with some galleries and I've sold some stuff via galleries also, obviously, for their fee. Yeah. And then on the mural side of things, I have, again, someone that hires me to do that and like books me on jobs like that. Like also.
Okay. So you're rep by
in a sense. It's not like an exclusive rep. It's just a kind of an agreement. Like, for example, my Chicago market, the person that I work with, I would go to them first. Or if I was individually approached by something in Chicago and I knew that it was like someone that he would do like the legwork in terms of communicating with them, I'd approach him and he would take care of it. Or vice versa. How more often is he finds something for me, he's like, hey, I have this wall that'd be perfect for you. And we move forward. But again, that's not like an exclusive relationship in terms of other places I've done murals. I act as my own agent at times.
Okay. So I'm going to get into that in a little bit. So basically you do most of your sales by yourself.
Yeah. Most of my sales for paintings. Yes.
Okay. And in terms of your social channels, is it mostly Instagram? Do you use TikTok or which ones are your kind of faves?
It's mostly Instagram. Everyone keeps telling me I should be on TikTok.
I'm torn with it. It takes a lot. Like, it's about content. If you catch the algorithm, it's the greatest thing in the world. If you don't, it's just a fucking slog. It's
my two cents on that is I don't speak for everyone else's bandwidth. My personal bandwidth is I need it freed up to do what I'm doing already. And I not only need it, I like to have that bandwidth because I'm still very much in development in terms of myself as an artist. And there is a lot of, in terms of like creativity, I think that goes into making a really viral reel or a really viral like TikTok. And just full honesty, like that's not my forte in terms of creativity. If I were to really, like I said, take up a lot of my bandwidth to do that, I know I could do it. It's just, I like to save my bandwidth for the things that I'm truly doing now. And so maybe that means I need to hire that out. And that's like somewhere where I'm at right now in terms of scaling my growth and production.
That's cool. Someone I interviewed that I thought said it best, that TikTok is just a meat grinder for content, right? And look at how much time I spend making content. And I sometimes am like, I think I spend more time making content than I do making art. Super annoying.
Yeah, it can happen.
Do you use any third-party sites like the Saatchis or like these kind of online digital galleries, or do you stay away from that completely? Okay.
I don't even know which ones I'm on anymore. I don't remember, but I've never sold anything through any of those.
Okay. I'm always curious. So I ask because the goal here is that people learn from other people's experiences, mistakes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a mistake to go on there. I just think for the type of art that I make, it just doesn't work well.
And in terms of your murals and your walls, do you like restrict how many of those you do in a certain, because I assume those are relatively time consuming and take a bunch of, you have to travel and they're just more labor intensive.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many of those you can physically do. I tend to hire an assistant when I do projects like that. Also, I'm based right now in Los Angeles, but most of my mural work that's not in an interior, like for example, I still do like office spaces. Like I'll do smaller murals interior for like an office space. So if one of those comes along, it doesn't take me more than 3 or 4 days, depending on the size, of course. But so I do like to crank those out when they come available, obviously. The bigger ones, yeah, usually it's in the warmer months of the year. And yeah, I mean, the last humongous one I did was, I think it was 70 feet by 30 feet or 65 feet by 30 feet, which is like, what is that? That's 30 times 60. Yeah, that's 1,800 square feet. Or so, just a little
did you price,
over.
Did you price that one by the inch?
That's a lot of inches. Murals are murals are always per square foot, actually. Yeah, that's how murals square foot, things are square inch. But go ahead.
And how do you, I've never done that many. I've done like one or two murals, but they were like freebies on, to figure shit out and learn. How do you, how does one even decide to charge for that? Like, how do you get, and I assume they pay the expenses and I don't even know how to think about that.
Yeah, so I think you can, I think going back to selling anything in terms of if you're creating a product, what's like a good way of knowing what to charge? That's like a good question always. I think that in doing it, I've figured out a way, I figured out how, I know how much it's going to cost me per square foot approximately. I know how much time it's going to take per square foot approximately. And I just factor all that in and make sure that materials and all that stuff is covered and, you know, plus my fee.
And do and then, you know, charge,
that's, go ahead.
Do you charge a flat fee or do you charge, is it a flat fee or is it a hourly or is it a, or obviously combined with scale? Like what, how do you think about it?
Yeah, like it's, the equation is usually typically the amount of hours I think it's going to take based on what the size of the wall is. And so whatever that's decided for me based on what I know people will usually go for. Again, like there are different types of projects where some of these projects, like for example, right now I'm bidding on a wall in Miami, potentially. Yeah. And, but it has a really nice location. And so sometimes you will eat a little bit of your fee because you want to be on that wall. And then sometimes you get awesome walls that are like in great location and they don't mind paying the full price because they have it like that, real estate companies or whatever other corporate thing it is.
And do you ever do, you never do work, like you don't do work for, what's your stance on doing work for free, for exposure?
There are some things where it's worth doing. Like, I don't know. I think the first mural I ever did that, for that D-line, I think I didn't get paid very much for it, but it was something that was necessary because it got me to where I am in terms of people being interested in my murals now. So I think this is the best way to say it. It's not that I'm not saying, yeah, go do a bunch of work for exposure because exposure doesn't pay the bills, but there is an element of, I think that art making needs to be a thing that you are interested in doing regardless of pay. Like in terms of just, that's obviously being very altruistic when thinking about it and very morally clean, but there needs to be an element of that where it's like, you're willing to kind of show what you can do. Again, I'm talking about this carefully because I'm not advocating for people that have wall space to be like, oh, like here's a great wall and I know this is a great start for you. If you're a company, if you're a client, if you're someone that wants a mural, you need to understand that the people that are gonna do amazing work for you, this is like their life. This is what they breathe and live and they deserve to be paid for that because it does elevate the space that it's on in many ways. Look at many like mural corridors throughout the United States and even the world now. It absolutely can elevate a space, increasing like whatever that's around it.
Yeah, I agree. And there's also, I'm a big, there's something about doing something like every now and again, taking a risk to do something at scale because big things tend to make big things.
Exactly, 100%. And like another aspect is, for example, like let's say you're negotiating for a wall and they're paying the budget and they're willing to pay you a fee, but then you also know that you can do this design and it cuts within the fee that you propose for yourself, but maybe you have a design that's like twice as long to produce, insane to look at, and like really takes it to that next level. I would almost always recommend doing that because you do that, the client's gonna be ecstatic. They're gonna love looking at it. Everyone around there is gonna love looking at it. People that are following your art already are gonna love looking at it and they'll just build more of that. And so I think that's usually a good move.
Okay. So I'm gonna switch the conversation a little bit, a little more to the cost side of it. I'm always curious to asking artists, where do you spend one, most of your money and two, most of your time?
Tape.
What? Tape, did you say?
The answer was tape and tape. Most of my money goes towards tape, and most of my time goes towards taping.
And obviously tape. You obviously mask and tape everything out as part of your painting style.
Exactly. My studio process and my mural process is quite similar, actually. So when you see some of these murals that I've done, it's like gigantic studio pieces. In a sense, they're not... In terms of the basic process, there's some differences, obviously, and in terms of execution and process and tightness. But yeah, it's a similar process, similar technique.
And so how much time do you find you're spending actually creating art versus all the things you need to do to sell your art? What is that break? Are you make art 50% of the time, 20% of the time, 90%? What does that look like?
I would say I make art like 65% of the time. So maybe 70% of the time. Mainly making art. I think the interest in my art right now has been more than it has ever been. And I'm at this inflection point where I feel like it would be nice to like hire out some of the little details like that I'm doing myself so I can spend more time making art. But yeah.
That was actually my next question. Do you have a team? And if so, who and what are they made out of? And or are you getting a team? Are you at that point where you're looking to acquire? And what are the spots that you want filled, thinking about as you're getting to that point to expand?
Yeah, I think I'm growing into having a team. I'm currently don't have a team there. Of course, there are people that I work with. I'm not like a solely one-man show. I have people I go to for some design work. Some social, whatever, not necessarily social media strategy stuff in that realm and other production things. But yeah, I would definitely like to, I think that it's important to not just have a team, but if you have a team, they're actually doing something. So when I see that there's things that I can't do, like that I'm not doing, that's when I know that there's someone that I need to do it. And so I'm kind of getting to that point, like I could definitely use some help in some of the different arenas. But in terms of the art making, I'm very much, not that I'm closed off to having an assistant. I've worked with some and it's been hard to get some of my process in it. And again, that's not necessarily anyone else's fault but my own. That means that I haven't created a system in which others can do it. And so that's just another element of scaling that.
I like that you actually think about it as process and systems, right? So often artists don't. It's also congratulations that you're like at the point where like you're actually considering bringing on employees and a team, and that the business is starting to get big enough that you realize that help is required.
It's a responsibility having a team, because you need to understand if you have someone working for you full time, that's their job. You can't just bail out and then all of a sudden they don't have an income or something.
Do you find that, do you sit on a ton, like how do you, the next question I want to deal with is kind of like inventory. Do you sit on a lot of inventory, or do you price correctly that your theory as earlier that it moves as it comes? And how do you keep track of one inventory and two collectors? Or do you?
The inventory question, I have pieces that I personally save. So right now my inventory, I have a few pieces that are like with specific people that are showing them. I don't have much inventory right now. I think I have in total maybe currently 5 or 6 pieces
that
are available. But that's because I just recently produced some for a show here in LA. And then I'm going to have 8 more pieces that I'm going to be producing for a show in Chicago that are like contractually with those galleries. So right now, I think it's just because of the timing. I've been in a really high production mode, and so I have more pieces than I normally do. But and those are like in the process of being sold. What was the question after that? I'm sorry.
And in terms of collectors, do you keep track of them? If so, how do you keep track? Do you reach back out to them as you work with new works?
Yeah, collectors. Yeah, I like to keep track of them. Honestly, a lot of them are like social relationships, just a friendship. I have some collectors that I know what they like and different levels of relationship and friendship with most of them. And I just treat it like a regular, not a Rolodex, obviously, because we have iPhones now, but just in my iPhone as contacts.
So, all right. Sometimes people have formalized systems or not. Nothing like that. Some days I do, and then some days I forget for a year, and then I pretend to start again.
Yeah.
And so when you do stuff with the galleries, so they're taking, like you said, you contract with them. What do they come to you and say, hey, we need 8 pieces for the show or 10, or what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, depending on I've shown in group shows always. So it's based on, sometimes it's show however many, this is how much wall space you have. You can do whatever you want with it. And then I think it's like a typical thing where once you show with that gallery, I think they have some sort of contractual, just like right over that piece that they get a percentage over if it's sold in a certain amount of time. So it depends based on the gallery, based on the contract. But again, just to be clear, I haven't worked with like too many galleries. That's something that's just getting started with me.
Okay. And yeah, I've had the difference between people who love it. I've spoken to people who are 100% gallery driven. I've spoken to people who are 100% Instagram driven. Like it's like this kind of range of people. Gallery economics suck.
They do and they don't. I think it's important. If you want, as an artist, if I want to work with higher tier galleries, I think it's important to start in some galleries because, you know, showing that's a thing that you can do is very valid. Bigger, there's like a graduation systems to galleries. You show with like your local galleries and it grows from there. Eventually, if you are going the gallery route to those higher level blue chip galleries, which that could be a lifetime of work to get there, which fair enough, it's a valid reason. But yeah, I think it's important to work in the arenas that you want to see yourself in. And so if you want to see yourself in a gallery, whatever tier, it's important to start wherever you can start there.
Now, that's actually a good segue. So like the galleries you wanted to be in, were these galleries that like you reached out to, or did they reach out to you? Like how do you go about getting those gallery gigs?
So yeah, like the galleries that I've shown with so far, it's been like, I haven't necessarily reached out to them. It's been like them reaching out to me. Yeah. And then I do have my eye on some other galleries that I'm kind of, whether it's like a social relationship on Instagram that I have with them or in-person relationship, it's like something that's growing. You work on those relationships all the time, I think.
Okay. I'm going to dig a little deeper there. You said like social relationships on Instagram. So do you like actually just message the galleries and be like, hey, they'll like your stuff? Do you start conversations? Like, how do you go about managing those relationships?
I honestly, I don't have a formula for it. It's just a super organic thing that happens. If someone, for example, like a gallery will follow my Instagram page and comment something, I respond. It's not just, I'm not like fishing for stuff from them. It's more so just, obviously someone follows you that it's in a field and it's clearly that's what they do based on how they're presenting themselves on Instagram. You just engage as if you would in whatever organic way you feel is right. And so I'm very much about, I don't like to feel desperate because I see a lot of like reels and stuff like that to me feel really desperate for engagement, and they play into a very specific like algorithm formula, like either using like the right sounds or whatever. I try to be as organic as possible. It's me behind the screen on Instagram. I don't have anyone running that. And I just treat it like if someone that whoever's running the look, whatever gallery page, they comment on something, I respond as if it's like a person.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm always interested to see how people like leg into that for the first time. And it's I'm always looking for good tips and techniques of kind of the way people approach these type of things.
Yeah.
Sorry
to jump in here. I feel like very, not imposter syndrome, that's not necessarily what I'm trying to say here, but just to be fully clear, I am very much still in the growing process of my making an art career. These are just things that I've done instinctually, and I don't, what's been working for me, there's definitely whole areas I can improve on. So I'm not trying to be here like the preacher.
No, by no means, but like we're all growing in our careers and like you're obviously having some success. So but like by whatever work it works, right? Like
that's right.
If you don't ask, you don't get. So
that's right.
I got scared for this podcast. I got scared. I couldn't get any artists. And I was like, I'm just going to, like all the people I follow, I'm just going to ask. And lo and behold, all these amazing artists are like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. If you don't ask, you don't get.
That's very true.
So you're, in terms of social, do you think Instagram's your best channel for acquiring new collectors, or?
I don't know if it's the best channel for acquiring new collectors. I think it's helped me acquire the collectors that I have so far. I'm not saying no to Instagram moving forward, but I think there's many other avenues to acquire collectors, and having shows and doing murals and having proper identification on the mural, whether it's a QR code or, I don't like signing my murals with an Instagram handle. I almost never do that. Actually, I've never done that. It's usually like an insult QR code. But having easy ways for people to know that it's you making the artwork, especially for the murals.
So the murals are a great inbound for you.
A great inbound, especially for other murals. Absolutely.
Now, let's go back to the QR code, because that's super, because it's a perfect thing, because I'm doing like a huge installation, and I'm debating whether to use a QR code on it to get people to sign up. Do you find you get a lot of interaction with the QR code?
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's say you do a mural and you search an installation and you'll just write on the side of it, like your Instagram handle with the @ sign. I think from my artwork personally, it takes away visually from what's on the wall. That's not to say that's not for everyone. Some people, if you're whatever kind of painter that you are, you can even incorporate your signature into the artwork and it works. So that's a composition choice. For me, I like to do the QR code because it's an effective link that has got a smartphone today. And so it's an effective way for people to go right to your Instagram. And I like the way it visually looks on the wall. I don't think it takes away from what's going on already.
Yeah. And ever since COVID, QR codes have become like just commonplace, right? Like it's very comfortable interacting. Do you do any PR or anything like that? Or do you look for any PR? Do you do that type of stuff, or you just don't? It's not a point in it that you're using it.
Yeah, actually, I just did a project in Chicago. Again, it was in collaboration with a real estate development company. And we skinned one of their construction sites, a very popular part of the city, with my pattern. And then there was like information about the property coming in, and then a whole section of the brand, like the area about myself, my Instagram, a visual of me, like a photo of me and like my bio. That's considered PR, I think. But nothing super like detail with like campaigns or anything like that.
Okay. And do you do email blasts or anything like that? Like you do keep and formulate an email list, or it's not an out? Okay. Okay. Next. Now I'm going into kind of like habits. Do you have any mentors or a coach or like people that you would look up or look after to that like are helping drive you on your career?
Crew called Out There Gang, OTG, and it's created and led by another artist, and he's obviously inspiration and someone that I look up to. And they're look to my colleagues and people who are doing it and doing it better, and people that I just for as examples. I don't know, nothing super formal, I would say, but
that's good. Yeah, but you have a group of art world friends that you roll with that you
absolutely. And if I ever unsure about something, the person I'm talking about is, again, I brought him up earlier, Lefty Out There. He's founder of OTG Out There Gang, and there's a few other artists that are all in the crew. And yeah, so we like to work together. I like to talk to them about projects because, you know, he's done a lot of work and he's got good insight on it. And also we're friends too. So it's not like a competitive thing.
That's awesome. I think it's so important. It's one of the things that I actually lack is like a bigger art network. Being able to ask questions from people who've done it before and know what they're doing and can give you clean guidance. I had it in my professional life and in my art life, I'm still working towards it. Do you share a studio with anybody, or you have your own solo studio space?
A solo studio space.
All right, that's cool. So we're actually getting close to the end of the interview and wrapping up. And as we come to the end, I always ask artists in their career so far, what was their biggest mistake and things they wish, I wish I didn't do that. And also, what was your biggest achievement that you're most proud about and that you were excited about?
Obviously, the largest today, I'm extremely proud of it. It was at the University of Illinois, in Champaign, Illinois. And it just was really sexy. I just really loved the way it looks.
Is that the one?
30 foot. Yeah.
Dude, that's so.
Say that one more time.
It's so big. Just even the scale, was it not mentally daunting? Were you intimidated by it? Was the wall intimidating or was it?
Honestly, I wouldn't say it was intimidating. I'm so comfortable in my process that I know what it was. And I took it a section at a time, broke it up. And I have maybe this lens to the way that I make art and even what my art looks like. I have a good way of looking at a problem, breaking it down into the sections that I need to address it. And murals in some way are just like visual problems that you have to solve.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
All right. That quote's making it somewhere. And have you had any other, if you had to give any advice to other artists, tips, tools, just general thoughts, do you have anything that you want to share with those just starting to come up?
Yeah, sure. I don't know how much it might be like obvious one, but I think that there's like a saying, it's chop wood and carry water. If you want to have a fire, you got to chop the wood. If you want to have water to drink, you got to carry the water. So just do the thing that you want to do. And then again, maybe that's like a duh thing, but, and what that could mean is like, you treat it like a job. It's like, you go to your studio or you're making art for 8 hours a day for 5 days a week or whatever that schedule is for you. I'm not saying one can decide what it is for themselves. I don't think it's enough to like make something cool and rest on your laurels until the next cool thing comes along. It's like cool things come along because you're constantly doing them.
Yeah, I think you have to put yourself out. You have to put yourself out there to get the results you want. You have to get out of the stands and get into the arena, right? If you want to play, you have to play.
What that can mean is just actual creation, like in terms of like producing pieces. Some people are like, oh, I'm waiting for a commission to make a piece, but sometimes you just got to make something sick because a commission can follow. And you should, in terms of like studio work, I think it's very important to continue to always be like creating something, just because how else are you going to develop something new?
My best works have come from mistakes. I was trying to make something else. I did something, screwed it up. And the thing I fucked up turned out to look better than the thing I was trying to make.
Yeah, that can definitely happen.
So next question, how do people find you? If they want to track you down for a piece of art or if they want to hire you for a mural, where do we come looking for you?
I have an Instagram, so cantstop.com. And then also you can email me, cantstop.com@gmail.com.
Fantastic. And if people want to reach out, those are the best channels.
Yeah. Hit me with a follow on Instagram. Take a look at what I make. I also have there's like a link tree on there. I can lead you to all my other sites, my website and otherwise. And yeah, if people are interested in a commission or a mural work, just shoot me an email.
I love it. Cool. Dot, I look forward to some, I'd say even bigger murals, but you're going to have trouble finding a wall that's larger. I've been following you for a while. I'm going to keep following your career. Thank you so much for spending some time and giving some insight today and keep doing what you're doing. It's clear you have the balls to sell some art, so keep selling.
I appreciate it. It was a great panel today. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Hold on.